You're listening to Let's Talk, episode 16. Howdy all and welcome. Father Corey here for our new episode of Let's Talk, our SQBN community podcast. We've got a couple of panelists today. We got one, our first returning panelist, and then a new panelist that should also be familiar to the SQPN community. First, Joanne, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning. Glad to have you back. And then our returning our new panelist who is returning to an SQPN podcast is Angela Cialana in Texas. How you doing, Angela?
Howdy, howdy, everybody. It's great to be back on SQPN after, I guess, a hiatus or whatever. It's like I never left.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Of course, you know, those who have been listening to SQPN for a while will recognize Angela from Catholic Weekend. So it's good to have her on Let's Talk. One thing I like to do is invite our new panelists to introduce themselves. So, Angela, why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Angela Cialana. I am in San Antonio, Texas, the deep in the heart of Texas, as we say. My everyday life is that I'm married. I've been married for almost 7 years now to a guy who is in radio, secular radio here in San Antonio. I personally work in ministry. I work for an evangelization ministry called Pilgrim Center of Hope, and I am the media coordinator there.
Excellent.
I do all the geeky stuff and also the creative stuff. Sure. SQPN has been part of my life probably since 2005 or whenever it got started. just been blessed to be part of the community, been to several Catholic New Media celebrations / conferences with SQPN, and even spoke at one. So, it's been a wild ride, and always great to be among the SQPN community.
Well, again, it's awesome to have you here and have you come back, and you'll definitely be invited in the future too, so get you involved. So, thanks. Joanne, what's been going on for you since the last time you were on?
Well, summers are supposed to be quiet in the parishes, but when you get a new pastor, sure, that doesn't happen. So it's just been a lot of, for those of you who don't know, I'm a pastoral associate for a collaborative of parishes in the Archdiocese of Boston. We're three churches, two parishes, and a cemetery. And I always say it that way because it gives you the full gamut of what we deal with. And it's just been very hectic. So we're finally going on vacation this week, my husband and I, who also works in the collaborative as our finance and operations manager. So I work with my husband and I live with my husband, and it's we need a vacation.
It sounds like you might need a vacation from each other.
Nah, not after 36 years. We got this down.
No, that's good. Yeah, it's important to get that time off. Believe me, I know. I'm trying to figure out when I'm going to take some time off.
Ugh, yeah. It is difficult because the minute you go, 12 things happen that you need to take care of.
Oh, yeah. I've had the call, you know, I've literally been, well, yeah, last time I went to visit my parents in Washington, literally had the call as I'm driving there. You've got a funeral next weekend. Oh, goody. I know. Got something to wait for.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And then the emails come, and it's like, or like we have a Slack channel for our collaborative. Mm-hmm. So, because I'm also the geeky person for the collaborative. So we get all this stuff on Slack, and I'm hearing about all these things, and I keep putting up, I'm on vacation.
Unless you just turn it off.
Yeah. Then you got to read them when you come back. There's no escape.
Yeah, I know. Oh, believe me, I understand. Yeah. I'm just going to put my phone away. What do you mean I've got 20 notifications? So
that's what's been going on.
Well, very good. Very good. I got to kind of brag a little for myself. One thing I did as a pick of the week, I think might have even been the first Let's Talk, rebooted Let's Talk, was the Couch to 5K program. Well, I completed it. I actually, wow, to the point now I can jog 5 kilometers at a time and not pass out. So that's a good thing.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. It was something I've wanted to do for a long time, for quite a few years. I think this is the third time I've tried to do this program and finally had the drive to finish it. So I had to brag about that a little bit. So that's
well deserved.
Yes, very much so. So today we're going to talk about a couple of very disjointed topics, but they're topics of interest to our panelists.
Maybe not. Maybe we can find a connection.
We can find a connection somewhere, but they should both be fun topics to talk about. Joanne had mentioned several times that she was very much interested in genealogy, in doing work in that. And Angela, you said you've had some interest in that as well. Yeah. It sounded like a good topic to discuss. You know, genealogy, when a lot of people think about it, they think of it, you know, ancestry.com and trying to find out, you know, who are my ancestors and things like that. And I'm sure there's more to it than just, gee whiz, here's who my, you know, great, 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 great grandfather was, you know. So, Joanne, why don't you tell me what interested you in genealogy?
Oh, a couple of things. I think for a long time, the only people who were digging up their past were the folks in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Mm-hmm. They were the only ones doing this. And as part of their methodology or theology, that's what they do. They connect mm-hmm. with their ancestors. So I have a friend who is LDS, and she started talking to me about it. But even before then, I am a second generation Azorean Portuguese in the United States. Mm. And I always wanted to know, past my grandparents, who were we? Where did we come from? And of course, asking my mother was like asking a brick wall. And you got to be honest, the woman would sit there and say to me, why do you want to know that? My mother came to this country and she didn't want to look back, and that was it. So we're done here. And it's like, okay. Right. So I just started with the basics, and the basics are, you know, look at what you have on hand. You don't have to go to run to the internet first. You look at what you have at home, pictures, birth certificates, death certificates, any kind of paper. Right. My mother used to save all my report cards, you know, that kind of stuff. And I started just looking at it and trying to piece together who we were. And basically, you know, if you've got an ancestry that goes back into the United States for a long time, you find all these people in the Civil War, and you find, you know, people who've done all these things, go across country in covered wagons. I'm from the Azores. I have fishmongers and farmers.
Yeah, exactly.
So my people are not.
That's still cool. Come on.
Well, for now.
Appreciate.
For now. But I learned a lot more about the history of the Azores, and that's in itself extremely fascinating. So what I've done from there, I mean, I've been doing this over 20 years, and I've done not only my background, but also my husband's. Now, my husband's is a lot more interesting because he's French Canadian, and one of his ancestors on the Mercier side is one of the first original 24 settlers of Quebec.
Wow.
So that right there, you know, you've got somebody who in Quebec, the last name is known very well. So it was easy to find. But I've done the DNA and I've done all of that, and It can be frustrating, it can be rewarding, but I think from what I'm doing, because I have no children and my line stops here, is I'm doing a lot of research that I can leave behind for other folks who might have brick walls, and maybe the information that I've, you know, gathered over 20 some odd years, and I'm still going with it, will be of help to somebody else. And I just find it's relaxing, believe it or not, even when you're up till 2 a.m. trying to follow down a rabbit hole somebody who's really not related to you, but it sounds like it. Sure. So that's a quick genealogical course in all in itself.
Well, that's great, though. I mean, it is interesting to learn about our family history. Well, how about you, Angela? You said you had some interest. Have you done much with it?
Yeah, actually. For me personally, I guess, coming from like a mixed race background or mixed ethnicity background, for me personally, I'm fascinated by just different cultures in general. And people's stories. One of my backgrounds is Irish, and the Irish like to tell stories. So whenever we would get together, there would be lots of stories, exchanged and about family and, just great memories, things like that. And so I think that just kind of instilled in me this desire to learn the stories of my family. And for me, genealogy has been something that gives me sort of that window into not only them, but also like, who am I, more so on a deeper level, like, all these different qualities that are part of me and my personality, like maybe seeing where they come from, farther back. And so that's been really cool just to, find out that, I have family members who have one family member in Mexico was a part of the, I guess, the uprising, the revolution that happened in Mexico, where Catholics were, persecuted and priests were persecuted. And if you've ever heard of Blessed Miguel Pro, he's a very famous priest who is known for having been killed by firing squad. And as he was being killed, he extended his arms out and he said, "Viva Cristo Rey," which means "Long live Christ the King." Sure. So for that connection for me, one of my ancestors actually helped him when he was in prison, and helped feed him and get him to like different places where he would say mass in secret and things like that. So this kind of cool, stories that, history too. History has so much to teach us. And when we actually get to see where our ancestors were involved in those different historical events, it really kind of, brings history alive, but also makes everything so much more relevant, so that I think we can appreciate history more and sort of integrate the lessons of history into our lives.
No, that's an important thing. I remember back in the 80s, there was the reincarnation movement, and everybody was a reincarnated Egyptian princess or, French king or something like that. It was almost kind of ridiculous. Genealogy doesn't do that. I think if we're serious about it, yeah, there are going to be people, like you said, Joanne, you're related to someone who was early settler, or your husband is, early settler of Quebec. And, there are going to be people like that. I know people who are related to some of the earliest pilgrims to land here in, Plymouth Rock and all that. But most of us, I think if I trace back my heritage, we'd be a bunch of Czech and German and Scandinavian farmers, because I come from an area that's farming. They came here to the United States to farm, to the good land that was available here at the time. So that's just as important, but it does help us to understand our heritage.
Oh yeah, I wasn't knocking the the farmers and the fishermen in my life. It's just, if you understand the history of the Azores themselves, they're pretty much the original melting pot, being an island stopover between the continent and the United States. So lots of different ethnicities have landed there, but subsequently we've all been known as Portuguese. So that when I did my DNA, this is where it gets interesting. When I looked at my ethnicity report on the DNA, yes, I'm 83% European, but right, I'm only 40% Iberian Peninsula. And the rest, the 35% of it happens to be Eastern European.
Sure.
And then 5% Ashkenazi Jew. which no one would have predicted in my family ever. But that means when you get at the 5% level, you're at the level of a great-great-grandparent. And I have two of them that I consider what's called brick walls, meaning you can't go any further because the documentation either isn't there or they don't let you see it. The country of Portugal only allows the members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to see everything that they have. Yes, because that's the contract that they signed with them. Subsequently, the church has put this up on Family Search, on Ancestry, but they're not allowing people who belong to those groups to see the same information. You have to find somebody who's LDS in order to find it for you. So, yeah, you go on a little bit of a trip. But the DNA is what told me something about myself, that I'm more connected to the world at large than just a small population of it. And recently I taught a one-nighter on genealogy and faith, and I tried to connect it to the biblical journey, where, you know, we tell our stories as Catholics from the Bible to connect ourselves with those who've gone before us. And it's the same thing with genealogy. You're trying to connect yourself with those who come before us to know who you are. And biblically, we do it to know who God is and who God is in our lives. So, yeah, people found that very interesting because they didn't think there was a connection. They think, well, I just want to find out who I am. Well, you find out who you are in the small group of your family, but you can also find out who you are in the bigger scope of who you are in the Church of Christ. So just a little talk about connections.
Yeah. That's something I didn't realize until recently, something you brought up, that Ancestry.com was actually founded by LDS, not the church itself, but members of the LDS church.
It was, and it has since, I believe, I'm not sure on this, FamilySearch.com is still controlled by the church. That's still that's their basic repository. Then Ancestry, I guess, was an offshoot, or that they separated it because it's actually a moneymaker. Family Search is free. So Ancestry now is a moneymaker, and they've separated that out from the church, but they share the same repository.
Right. Yeah, and actually, just looking on LDS's website, they advertised FamilySearch.org as the church's tool for finding and preparing family names, etc. So,
right, so they don't have to buy into, and the members of the church don't have to go to Ancestry.com unless they want to do their DNA. Before that, there was a smaller company called Family Tree DNA, which is where I did my DNA through. And they're the only company that doesn't share their results with a larger pool of people who buy into it. Let's put it this way. I want to say Big Pharma, so I'll just say Big Pharma. But that's why I've hesitated in going all for the 23andMe or Ancestry, even though that's a bigger pond and I could find more people. I'm just uncomfortable with sharing that part of it with anybody else, you know, because I don't know what they're going to do with it. Now, I'm happy that some people are finding, you know, killers and all kinds of stuff through genealogy. I think I don't have a problem with that. Just tell me that's what you're going to do. You know, don't just kind of put it in the 25 pages of things you don't read and sign off on just to get on the site.
Exactly.
So can I share like a couple tips that I probably have like very little experience compared to Joanne, but for me, like Family Search, the site that you just mentioned, has been really good for me because I don't want to pay for the Ancestry subscription. So I just, you know, made a free account on Family Search, and you get to go through all their records. They have some great search capabilities. And like you can search by name, obviously, but you can also search by like first name, or maybe even like a similar first name or similar last name, because, you know, one of the things you learn is like people change their names. And also when their names were documented, like in the census and stuff like that, is that oftentimes their name might be abbreviated or changed in some way, depending on who was actually writing down the physical right. record. So that's very helpful. And you can also search by like place and time, more or less. So there's all these different kinds of capabilities. But one of the things that I most enjoy is actually reading the census records, because you get to see like where exactly, like sometimes they give you an exact address of where mm-hmm. your family lived, and then who was all in the household. So maybe like, you know, for me, one of the cool things to find out was just like, you know, what they were doing in the household, or if they had any like people living with them, like other family, extended family members, or even servants, or mm-hmm. If they were a servant themselves, or, you know, employees, something like that. So that's really cool. And then you also get to see like a lot of times what their education level was, and, you know, what kind of work they were doing at the time. And even like their literacy, or this cool stuff like that mm-hmm. that you would never really think to look into, but it's just given to you there on the census records.
Yes. Census remunerators, though, some at least in my family, if you were not an English speaker, the names would get all jumbled yeah. up. So you end up with my father, for example, his first name was Bento. All right. He's listed as Benjamin about four times. Wow. And that can throw off a novice, you know, right. genealogist, because they're thinking, oh, that's not my person. So you have to look all the way around that census and say, okay, do you know if they lived at this address? All right. Did the mother and father look correct? You know, you mm-hmm. have to take all of that stuff into consideration. But the census records are fun, and they only let them out every, like, they just put out the 1940 census maybe 3 years ago. It'll be another 7 years right. before they put the 1950 census out. They have a range that, because of personal privacy.
I suppose, yeah. you know, after 50 or 60 years, that it does, it's not as important at that point to protect those records.
Right. But they're still very, I mean, I'm glad some people are very cautious with that. And then mm-hmm. there are times I want to shake people like the state of New York and say, could you please just put all this out?
yeah. yeah.
You know, it's 1920 I'm looking for, not 1980. So just,
yeah.
just
everybody I'm looking for is dead. So it's not a problem.
But I understand that they're just like the church is concerned, because we get a lot of people at the parish, of course, because mm-hmm. we have a cemetery also, that call us up and say, can you look this up for genealogical purposes? And my poor secretaries, that's not their job. they're yeah. taking care of 20 million other things, and now they want you to look this up. But we also have to be careful, because those records that we have sometimes can have notations in them that is not anybody else's business. So right. talking about adoptions or things like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to be careful. The Archdiocese of Boston is putting theirs up on American Ancestors. All of they had all of our early registers photo digitized, and now they're putting them up slowly. And I know the Archdiocese of both New York and Philadelphia, however, are putting them behind Find My Past, and all of these cost money. And Angela's right. If you want to go to the free stuff, there's a lot of free stuff out there, but a lot of it is what you want to pay. They want you to pay for it, and it gets expensive after a while.
Sure.
It's
sure.
not yeah. a cheap hobby.
Well, that actually comes to a good question. How would someone, let's say me, if I wanted to research my past, how would you get started?
With what you have at home. With what your parents have, with what you have, that's the first thing you look at. What paper is in your house? What pictures are in your house? Because sometimes if you flip the back of those pictures, somebody's written on them and said, this is this person. And always interview the elders first, because they're the ones that have the reposit of knowledge right now, which is maybe 30 or 40 years ahead of you. So you get their knowledge, and you get everything that they have, and write it down or record it, and then you can start from there. Just start piecing it together. If you like puzzles, this is the ultimate puzzle.
Oh yeah, I'm a big puzzle person, so it's really fun for me. Another thing I would say is just like as far as practical stuff goes, like the way that you know, some of my family members have done genealogy is through written word and, you know, on paper. But nowadays, with so many digitized records, I actually create a system for myself in Google Drive. So mm-hmm. I have like one folder that's my family tree, and then I create subsequent folders for each family member. Like, you know, it'll be like, for example, my maternal grandparents, mm-hmm. and then I'll have like one for my maternal grandfather and one for my maternal grandmother. Mm-hmm. And then you just kind of, you know, add to that. So you can add your documents into that folder that pertain to that person.
Sure, sure.
And then I have like one doc that's just a narrative of like their life. So I'll have like a general timeline of like when they were born, maybe when they moved mm-hmm. to a certain place, when they died, things like that, when their kids were born. And so that kind of gives me a place to sort of record things digitally. And that's been really helpful for me because, you know, like we've been talking about, a lot of this stuff is like PDFs or JPEGs or things like that, mm-hmm. that you're either going to have to print out or just save on, you know, digitally. Sure. So yeah, for me, that's really been helpful.
Angela, do you have a program, software program that you put all this into?
Actually, I don't, but I know that there are some programs out there. Do you use one?
I use a program called Herodes. It's actually a French program, but I like it because it's easy to use, and they update it, I think, once every 2 years or once a year. It doesn't connect to any of the sites, but it does connect. It does allow you to search in Family Search. If you have your tree in there, it will connect people in your tree to whatever the information is in Family Search. So I do like that component of it. They all run about $70, around 70, between 50 and 70 bucks. But they're well worth it because now you have it digitized and you also can see it. I'm a visual person, so I need to see sometimes where everything goes. Because I decided 20 years ago, even then, I wasn't going to start using paper. I know people who have paper, you know, the big 20 generation
huge
papers,
and
they're
stuff.
Writing yeah. all this stuff in, and there's a lot of a correction tape on it, and they're rewriting stuff. I decided I would never do that. So I put everything digitally first, but that's a good thing to get once you get your stuff together and you want to start putting the pieces together. So have a program like Herodes or Roots Magic, and Roots Magic has a free one if you want to try it first. Most of them will let you try it before you do it.
Cool.
That's very cool. Have either of you had the opportunity to travel, to go and see some of these places where your ancestors are from?
No. Because I don't fly well. So I figure at some point, yes, I need to get to the Azores. Because that is my one trip. But I might need either a Valium or something to get me there. but most of my people settled where I live, so I can I still know where everybody was when they got here.
Sure.
So
that's really cool.
That's a gift. I think probably for most people in the U.S. that's not the case. Like for me, you know, it would be lots of different cities and in Texas and Illinois and New York, and then you know, going to the different cities in Spain and Ireland and Portugal and things like that. So that would be really neat. I think probably the first place that I would go out of the U.S. is Ireland, just because that's one of the places where I have like just the most knowledge and kind of a personal, you know, reasons too. And so just to see that would be really neat. For people who do or are listening and haven't looked into this, Irish records are really, really hard, really challenging, because a lot of us were poor.
No, and there was a fire also. Their records got wiped out for a certain period of time. So you can't find them past, I think, 1850 or something. I don't have any Irish relatives, so...
It's really bad. It's really bad. Ireland is working on adding more records as they find them and digitizing them for people. So it depends on what county your ancestors were from. Unfortunately, in the county where my ancestors were from, that there isn't very much. But I think, you know, it's cool. Like, you, again, you learn about the history. And so, like, you know, I didn't know, or maybe I came across it maybe when I was studying world history, but I didn't know that, like, the just how badly the Catholics were persecuted in Ireland fairly recently, and what effect that had on, you know, family members, and, you know, with the potato famine, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, if you're listening and you've ever really thought about it, I would definitely recommend just doing the very basics, like just seeing how far back you can go in your family tree, just by, you know, asking relatives, and then do a basic search for people and see what comes up.
Perfect. Yeah, that's Google, a good place to.
Google's good for that. That's right. I was going to say Google is good for that. You can do all kinds of research on Google. What did we do without it?
Go to the library. Do field work. So that's a good place to take a break here. Kind of to thank you once again for listening to Let's Talk. This is our community podcast, and we want to hear from our community. So right now, SQPN is doing a listener survey where we want to hear from you. What interests you? What would you like to hear from us? What are we doing well? What can we change? Let us know. Go take the survey at sqpn.com/survey. And if you do take it, you'll be entered in for one of two $50 Amazon gift cards. So we're giving away two of these gift cards. You can use them for whatever you want, but it's a thank you for taking the survey, is to enter you into this, this sweepstakes, I guess you can call it, this drawing. So please do go and take the survey. It only takes a few minutes. Just ask some questions about your interests, your likes, your dislikes, and let us know what you want to hear. We're obviously doing a lot of new things here at SQPN. We're trying to get things ramped up and moving. For example, we've got our renewed podcast, Secrets of Star Trek, starting up here really quickly. I can't remember if it's the day this releases or next week, but it is coming soon, so you can listen to that. Of course, Secrets of Doctor Who and other things we've got going on. So again, take a look at that survey, fill it out, and let us know what you think. So now we're going to switch gears a little bit. Something more that Angela brought up as a topic of interest. There's kind of a trend on YouTube right now for reaction videos. I think SQPN viewers would be most familiar with Father Roderick and his multi-million view Star Wars trailer reaction. But yeah, it's much more than that, isn't it, Angela?
Oh, yeah. I mean, to make a transition from one topic to the other, there is actually a channel called React, and it's created by the Fine Brothers, two guys who are brothers, and they created a couple of YouTube channels that get like millions of hits. But one of their most popular series is actually Elders React. And so they get these generational differences with they get, you know, people who are elders, senior citizens, and they have them watch different, you know, things that are popular, you know, music videos and stuff like that, or just stupid videos that get a lot of hits. And you watch these people react to these crazy things, and to see their reactions and how a lot of times it is humorous. Sometimes, you know, they're throwing their wisdom out. And so it's really interesting how popular these things are. I'm curious what you guys, what your, I guess, experience is seeing reaction videos, if you have a favorite, or, you know, I'm really curious to hear your thoughts.
I think I'm most familiar with youth, like teens react to, and then it's older technology, like rotary phone or classic computer. Like, I grew up with the Commodore 64 computer. So then they throw these modern day teens at a computer that was my teenage computer, you know, on what they think of this and how it works and everything. So that's kind of what I'm more familiar with. How about you, Joanne?
I knew nothing about this topic, since I'm the only person who wants every child off my lawn. But I took up the task because I am a geek, and I went onto YouTube last night. And I have to say, some of them are absolutely priceless, and others are just why. but what I kind of, I did see a real doctor watching an episode of Grey's Anatomy. Now, yeah. I thought that was very interesting because now you get a real guy saying, they'd never do that. That doesn't happen. Yeah. Or, yep, that's exactly the way our on-call room looks. You know, so it was nice to see that. Then I saw a young millennial watch for the very first time Bohemian Rhapsody. I was sitting there going, yeah, that's really good music, isn't it? Seriously, yeah. Like real dope. No kidding. I guess what it reminds me of is, you know, growing up in the old days, my mom especially loved music. I think that's why I became a musician. And she used to listen to somebody by the name of Spike Jonze. And what Spike Jonze used to do was take modern music of their time and do weird things with it, like, you know, throw in duck calls or, you know, pratfalls or, you know, strange things. And then, of course, my generation grew up on Weird Al Yankovic.
Yep.
You know, taking something that everybody knew and changing all the words to it, making something different. Now you have Postmodern Jukebox, which kind of does the same sort of thing. So I guess every generation has its, you know, either it's a take on, either it's an editorial on the times or just some plain old silliness. And I think this is the millennial generation's take on, let's look at something and show somebody reacting to it. Again, it has its pros and cons, but thank you for letting me know about it, because now when somebody says reaction video, I'll know what they're talking about. Yeah. And I don't look like I don't know what I'm talking about. But it is interesting.
What I wonder is how much of it is, there's kind of this sense with the internet, despite the fact the internet connects us in a way that we could have never imagined 15, 20 years ago. I mean, as we're recording this, we're talking over Skype, we're looking at each other, you know, we've got the video stream and everything, but there's still a feeling of disconnection. I think a lot of millennials especially have. Yeah. Could this be kind of trying to fill that?
Oh, yeah, I think so. For me personally, I can speak to that being an affirmative because, like, one of the reasons I can podcast on Saturdays, kind of pulling the curtain back a little bit, is that my husband works on the weekends. And so I'm alone on the weekends. Mm. And so for me, like, having these reaction videos is actually, I found some kind of weird camaraderie with the people that are recording these videos because, you know, we're having almost like a shared experience where like I'm able to kind of watch something that they're also watching or, you know, reacting alongside them. A lot of times, you know, these days you see more reaction videos coming up for like TV shows. Mm-hmm. So like it's not just commentary, like, you know, we would all go watch separately and then you'd come together and talk about the show afterwards. But it's actually people recording themselves watching a TV show or a movie trailer. You know, those are really popular too. And then you see everything as they're watching it. You're watching it too. So it is almost like a shared experience. And I think it's really interesting that people are actually now paying people to create reaction videos because there are reactors, as they're called, who have their own like Patreon accounts. So one of the things that I did before this episode was to go and look at one of the Patreon accounts for a channel that I watch, which is called Blind Wave. And they have over 6,000 patrons on Patreon, and they're making $39,000 a month on Patreon for reaction videos.
How do I get that job?
I know, right?
Wow.
But, you know, it's interesting, though. I'm not as familiar with the reaction community. I'm more with the video game community, you know, where people will play video games and record it or live stream it on Twitch or something like that. And you see the same kind of thing. And I think it's from the same background of people wanting this connection. But they You can get video game streamers who can be making, you know, six figures a month playing video games.
Yeah.
And it, but what's interesting though is they don't start out there. You know, it's not like, you know, multi-level marketing. Get in on video games and you'll be making six figures in a month. No. A lot of them, at least the ones that I've followed in the past, they'd build up to that. They'd start out and they just start throwing videos out on YouTube. They'd start streaming on Twitch and they might have three or four viewers. That becomes 30 or 40. It becomes 300, 400, and it's building. And of course, as it builds, it it's exponential. And it's kind of interesting where a lot of these, they kind of basically built up their channels.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in youth ministry for a long time. And one of the things that you'll find now is when you talk to kids who are 15, you know, more or less years old about what they want to do as a career, a lot of them will say, I want to have a YouTube channel where I, you know, do reactions or I do, you know, makeup tutorials or I do whatever their hobby is or whatever they like to do. This is now actually a feasible career and people are literally moving to Los Angeles at the age of 18 years old with, you know, money, a substantial amount of money and are able to create a career for themselves based off of YouTube, and that includes reactions, as well as other content, you know, creation. But it's really a new phenomenon, but I think it's also finally, you know, YouTube's been around for a while, right? I mean, we've all kind of seen the stupid, you know, cat videos is kind of like the meme that everybody knows about. But I think it's really kind of bled more into our culture now because, like, you know, we don't have to go in depth into this. I really don't want to. But like with the clerical abuse scandal that's happening right now, you see people demanding like, the church should react to this? You know, what is the church's reaction? What is so-and-so's bishop's reaction to this? Right. And a lot of people are calling for reactions more so than being patient and allowing for a more thought out response. So what do you guys think about that? I mean, do you feel like as you're going on social media or even just talking to people that we're getting more reactionary rather than that response type of attitude?
Because I'm the oldest one here, I say fondly, I just find the whole reaction thing, I guess for me, just a bit foreign because I'm a type of, I mean, I give talks, I'm with people all the time, and I'd rather be in a room full of people watching something together, reacting to it, and then being able to discuss what they've just seen rather than watching just somebody looks like sterilized in a sterilized fashion reacting to something. Because then you still don't have the interaction. So I'm glad the church is not getting into this. I hope not, because I think it would minimize what we have to give towards not only ourselves in this situation, but to the world at large. So I'd be a little, you know, I'm in no way am I putting it down. In no way am I not seeing value in it. I'm just saying for us, it would probably not be the best way to deal with what we have to deal with right now. Our response has to be more personal, has to be more, you know, talking with people in a room together or in a Skype situation like this where you can get a group of people together and they can react to you immediately in time. Right. So you can react back to them. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I think one concern is that we are very much a reactive culture right now. Something happens and you have to have immediate response. You know, the cameras are on you. You have to respond now. And unfortunately, we see the results of that where people say things that they take back because they recognize later, wait a second, I didn't, you know, that was phrased badly. I shouldn't have said that. I probably shouldn't have spoken at all. It's very much we need an immediate reaction. And I think, again, using our current circumstances, I think that's why we hear such a strong call that there needs to be a bishop resigning. Doesn't matter which one. It just needs to be a bishop resigning. Whether you agree with that or not, we're not going to get into that. It's just there needs to be a reaction and it needs to be public. Mm-hmm. And I think these reaction videos kind of tie into that of this, you know, this there needs to be a public reaction. Now, they're a positive generally. Those videos generally are very positive. They're reacting to a TV show. They're reacting to music, technology, whatever it is. But I think it is because of our 24/7 constant media culture, we expect immediate reactions. Mm-hmm. And there are times when it's best not to have that immediate reaction, but to say, hold on, let's think about this. Let's see what's going on and then react.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Father Corey, since you are a parish priest, like, do you see this type of phenomenon, like reacting? Do you see it affecting your parishioners, like family dynamic or even just parish life? I know you're a very rural area, but I mean, do you see that at all? Or even Joanne too, like, do you see that?
I think so. I think a little bit, especially among the younger people. You look at the activities they're involved in, it's all things like sports and stuff that's, again, more instant gratification. You know, of course, you know, kids that are on the phones here, just like everybody else, you know, we got just as good cell coverage in town, at least, as anybody else does. And they're on the phone and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it is something I think we do need to take serious as a church. But if, like you said, though, Joanne, we need to kind of help get them to the face to face more than the staring at the little black box in their hand.
Yeah, that I'm the director of one of the parish's confirmation program. And I had, when I get back with them next month, it's going to be very interesting because I'm sure there's going to be lots of questions and they're going to want things addressed, especially right now. And you have to, it needs to be a personal thing. I mean, the techie in me probably said at one point in the last couple of weeks, maybe I should put out a little, you know, video blurb to my parents and kids and say, look, you know, we'll talk about it when we get together. But I decided not to. I want to do this, you know, face to face. So, and I think whether that's my age or whether that's my approach or whether it's both, I don't know. But I think in this situation, it's universal, whether it's rural where Father Corey is or whether it's, you know, a suburb of Boston at this point, I think it just needs to be met with a face to face and an openness so that people can talk about it and feel like they're being heard as well as them hearing us and what we have to give to the situation.
So there is one area of, I think, very positive element to this, you know, besides just having fun with reactions. I was really, really fascinated by a YouTube channel that I found recently, but they've been going for a couple years now, and it's called Lost in Vegas. And it's these two guys who are African-American. They sit down and they are saying, you know, we are generally just familiar with rap and hip hop music, but we want to understand other people's cultures and kind of what they come from. So why don't you guys, as the viewers, tweet us or comment and tell us what songs you like that we can react to? So they've actually created a really interesting brand on YouTube where they call their fans free thinkers because you can find people on their YouTube videos that are, you know, country Western fans and metal, heavy metal fans and hip hop fans and all kinds of different music, classical, but they're all engaging with each other and they're all giving each other a chance to really talk about why, you know, why are these country Western lyrics talking about loving your guns or, you know, why are, why are, you know, hip hop lyrics, you know, talking about, you know, whatever it is. Cause they not only listen to the music, but they also talk about the meaning of the lyrics and, you know, they appreciate the musicality of the different artists, even if it's, you know, what is that instrument? I don't know what that is. So it's cool to see that these two guys have sort of created a community where people become more open to each other and trying to understand, you know, how what our differences are, why they are. And I think that's really positive. I think it, you know, this type of setting has the potential to maybe do something, you know, beyond music. You know, music is very universal, and I think it's a good starting point. But, you know, maybe we can see something even, you know, further down the line with, you know, more complex or deeper, you know, topics.
As a musician, I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we live in a culture that's so split. So that's good to hear that there are movements like that, groups like that, that can talk, even if it's about differences in music. Because, of course, our music a lot of times influences our political views and influences our family life views and so on. So that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Well, this is a good place, I think, to wrap up this discussion. It's been a great discussion, actually. It's very interesting. And of course, you remember Angela doing Picks of the Week. So we're still doing that. I hope you got one for us. So we'll let you go first then.
Well, you know, my pick of the week, I'm going to say it's Lost in Vegas YouTube channel. Go check them out. And, you know, also look at the comments, like I said. And I think you'll find it to be pretty encouraging, whether they're watching Metallica or, you know, Willie Nelson or Johnny Cash. You know, it's really fascinating. And I think we can all kind of learn something from it, too. So Lost in Vegas YouTube channel. Check it out.
Excellent. Excellent. And you, Joanne?
And I always have more than one pick, but my big pick of the week is the Genealogy Gems podcast, Lisa Louise Cook. She seems to be a wonderful person. I've listened to now for about 4 or 5 years. She can take you through how to do genealogy, where to go to look for the best research tools. She has a lot of people on, like a DNA specialist, an archivist, somebody who does military records, and they do every month. She has a free one. She has a free podcast, and she also has a paid one. Right. So she does a little bit different on each one. But she's, if you're just starting out and that's something you're interested in, then I would say Lisa Louise Cook's Genealogy Gems podcast. And speaking about music, I'm just pimping this one because I know these two kids, Zach Stokowski and Matt Reichert, have started a podcast called Open Your Hymnal. And what they doing is they are interviewing the composers of songs or lyrics, or, you know, of songs that are in our Catholic hymnals. And they're bringing these composers to the general public to find out what was their motivation, why did they write this, you know, what kind of contributions do they give to our church music. And of course, since music is universal, and it speaks of our experiences, I highly recommend that podcast for those Catholics out there, or for those people who are just interested in hymns and how hymns are put together. So it's called Open Your Hymnal.
Oh, excellent. That sounds interesting. My pick of the week is, it's an app. I like the techie stuff, of course. But it's the Echo Prayer app, and it's available for both Android and iOS. I think I promoted this on Catholic Weekend a couple of years ago when it first came out. Well, they've been improving it. And one thing they just announced is they've got a group functionality that they're opening to churches. So instead of having your usual prayer group list, like every church has, you know, all the little old ladies are on the prayer chain. instead it can be done on the app. So then when someone pushes a prayer request to the group, everybody in the group gets notified instantly. And so it stores them in there, and you can schedule when you pray and how often you pray and things like that. So it's very interesting. I've set it up again after seeing their announcement, and I've got it for the liturgy hours, or I pray the Breviarium Romanum, the older breviary. Mm-hmm. And my phone will kind of pop up a little announcement. Oh, time to pray morning prayer, time to pray noon prayer, you know, so that reminds me of time to pray that I need to take time, step away from the desk, step away from the computer, and go pray. So very much an app worth checking out for reminders to prayer. And, you know, maybe at some point we could set up an SQPN group within it so that we can have prayers for our community within this app. We'll have to look into that. Well, thank you both again for coming on. Glad to have you. Angela, where can people find you?
You can find me. Well, I'd rather that you not find me. No, I'm just kidding. You can find me here. Actually, I just want to plug another SQPN podcast I was recently on, Secrets of Coco. Oh, yeah. So if you ever saw the movie Coco, the Pixar movie, we talked about some really cool in-depth stuff that you're not going to get anywhere else, I think. So check out Secrets of Coco podcast here on SQPN.
And that should be within our Secrets of Movies and TV feed.
Yes.
And Joanne.
Well, I show up on Twitter every once in a while under a Ritual Diva. Long story. I'll explain it another time. And if you're looking for me at the parishes, then it's www.cranberrycatholic.org. We happen to have the parishes in a cranberry, in the areas where cranberries are harvested in Massachusetts. So that, thus the name Cranberry Catholic.
Oh, very cool. And again, I'm Father Corey Stika. You can find me at my website where I post my homilies, frcorey.org, frcorey.org. And my Facebook handle is Father Corey Stika. That's my page, because, of course, I can't be Father Corey as my title for my personal account. Thanks, Facebook. but Father Corey Stika, last name spelled S-T-I-C-H-A. Thank you again for listening to Let's Talk. If you have feedback, you can send that at letstalk@sqpn.com. Thanks again, and God bless.